Oxford Sparks Podcast, Episode 1, Origins, Part 2. Within the vast, expanding universe, around a newly formed star called the Sun, how exactly did a planet like Earth come to be?
People have theorized for a couple of hundred years that the solar system was formed from a swirling disk of material left over from the formation of the Sun, and the planets basically accreted from this disk of material. How that disk originated and the constituents of the dust and gas that came into that disk has been the subject of a lot of intensive research. I'm Alex Halliday. I'm an isotope geochemist, and I spend much of my time thinking about the origins of the solar system, and in particular the Earth, in terms of how the planet was built and what are the constituents of a habitable planet in particular. How do you actually build up the building blocks that make the Earth the way it is today?
In some ways, it's the most profound question of all. Before we can even consider life, before we can consider intelligent life, we have to have a place for all of that to develop. So what are the origins of Earth?
The question arises, well, how did our own Earth-sized objects form? How did you actually make terrestrial planets in our solar system? And that's something we actually haven't really had a very good handle on until relatively recently, in the last few decades. Most of the real change took place in the first 100 million years. You saw the growth of the planet from what must have been dust originally up to something that's Earth-sized.
And here lies one of the biggest problems in planetary science. How do you get from dust up to something that's about a kilometer in size?
Some people think there must be some glue involved, like ice maybe. But actually, in the vacuum of space, ice won't condense, even at very cold temperatures, in the inner solar system. The key part of this is that once you get up to the size of about a kilometer, something like that, then gravity starts to play a major role.
And this is where things start to happen. You get a sort of runaway growth. More material means more gravity, which means more material, which increases the likelihood of collisions and growth. And as objects begin to stick together, you get 2 kilometer objects, and then 4 kilometer objects, and then 8 kilometer objects, and 16 kilometer objects, and 32 kilometer objects, and 64 kilometer objects.
But that just takes you up to an object that's maybe 1,000 kilometers in size, that kind of object. And you basically mopped up all your material in the neighborhood that you're going to pull in by local gravity. And that's where you actually rely on longer term, what one can call stochastic collisions. So the idea is, you know, as planets build up, they perturb each other's orbits. Small planetary embryos of 1,000 kilometers in size get flung out, and then they gradually collide with each other, and they actually start to build up bigger objects. And that period that goes from a few hundred thousand years to maybe 100 million years is the period of what sometimes think of as oligarchic growth.
The biggest objects get bigger, dominating over the smaller objects that get mopped up by the larger ones.
And that's what happened to the Earth, we think, that basically Earth built up as a result of these collisions.
So the formation of our solar system occurred a long time ago out there in space, and we obviously weren't around to take notes. So how do we know how old our solar system is?
What I do is make isotopic measurements of meteorites and meteorites that come from Mars, bits from the Moon, etc., which tell us how long it took this inner solar system to be built.
Isotopes are essentially different flavors or variations of a particular element. They're the same element, but thanks to a different number of neutrons, they have a different weight. Looking at the composition of these isotopes in a certain material can help you build up an idea of where it came from and how old it is, almost like looking at a signature or a fingerprint.
The origin of the solar system is a beautiful example of that, because these isotopes tell you about the mixture of components that contributed the dust that we're all made of. You know, there's some stuff that came from supernovae that's in your body, and there's stuff that comes from other kinds of regular star-forming processes. And so the isotopes basically tell you about how homogeneous the atoms are in the solar system, how well distributed they are, because stars generate huge diversity in isotopic compositions. That stars are where we generate our isotopes, or most of them. And the mix of material that comes from stars into a bit of a galaxy, or eventually into a new star that's forming from all the dust and debris around it, that mixture tells you a great deal about the environment, both in terms of the origins of the various components, the kinds of stars that are involved, and also the processes of mixing. The solar system can also be studied from the point of view of time, how quickly all these building blocks got put together. We do this using isotopic decay, radioactive decay. You've probably all heard of things like an element like uranium, which is radioactive.
Radioactive isotopes are relatively unstable. They have a greater number of neutrons relative to protons, and they tend to decay into something else. If you know the rate and the probability of the decay, then you're one step closer to being able to determine the age of something.
What we use in geological time, where you're trying to measure things over 4.5 billion years, is isotopes that decay extremely slowly. So, for example, uranium-238, which is the most abundant isotope of uranium, has got a half-life of roughly 4.5 billion years, about the same age as our solar system. So that means that today, if you measure the amount of uranium-238 in a sample of uranium, you're looking at half the atoms that were present 4.5 billion years ago.
So, if uranium-238 decays to lead-206...
and you know the decay constant, the rate at which one goes to the other...
then you can look at the amount of lead in your sample and...
you can figure out how much time must have elapsed to produce that much of the daughter from that much of the parent. So that tells us, we use meteorites in particular, which give ages of 4.5 billion years.
Et voilà, there you have it, the age of the solar system. Relatively young compared to the universe as a whole. So we have methods to determine the age and the origins of objects in our solar system. But what about the formation of our own planet and its small rocky partner, the Moon? Let me introduce you to Theia.
Theia was the mother of Selene, who's the goddess of the Moon. So the idea is that this planet, Theia, basically gave birth to the Moon.
One way to explain the origin of the Moon is the collision hypothesis.
That basically the Moon formed as a result of a collision between two planets, one of which was about Earth's present size, maybe a bit smaller. We sometimes call that other planet Theia. And what we've discovered, to our amazement, is that Theia, or rather the atoms that are in the Moon, look actually just like those of the Earth.
And that's a bit of a puzzle, because simulation suggests that the Moon should be made up of material from this planet Theia, given off during the early collision. A more recent theory suggests that the collision was so violent that material from Earth and Theia were vaporized, and that means it could be mixed before condensing to form the Moon.
And that means the Moon would form from a well-mixed reservoir that was identical with the Earth. Theia would have just mixed in with that stuff.
Okay, all flight controllers, gonna go for landing. Retro.
Go.
Fido.
Go.
Guidance.
Go.
Control.
Go.
Telecom.
Go.
GNC.
Go.
Ecom.
Go.
Roger,
copy. Go.
Capcom, we're go for landing.
Eagle, Houston, you're go for landing. Over.
So if you want to understand how the Earth formed, you've got to understand how that Moon formed. If you're going to do that, you've got to have samples. It's those samples and the first Apollo astronauts, particularly Apollo 11, were absolutely 100% critical to everything that we're doing in terms of understanding these main stages of Earth accretion. The most important issue, of course, is the issue of origins. Where do you come from? Why are you here? And everybody wants to know this stuff. You know, it's part of being a human being to have an imagination that asks questions about where you come from and why you're here. And so this goes to the heart of that issue.
It's weird to think that to understand the origins of the planet we sit on, that we walk on, that we live on, we had to go all the way to the Moon. But in some sense, it's a very human thing. We had to explore to find out where this planet of ours came from. You've been listening to the Oxford Sparks podcast, narrated by me, Chris Lintott, and produced by Ed Prosser. You can find a full list of credits and much else besides on our website at oxfordsparks.net.